Welcome, guys, to episode 58 of Behind the Shield podcast. My name is James Gearing, and I have yet another amazing guest for you this week. The firefighting profession, I think, would collectively agree that there have been very few movies made about what we do that earn our respect. Backdraft certainly was one of the first. Most recently, Only the Brave absolutely has held up to that same standard. But the other one would be Ladder 49. So my next guest is John Travolta. Now, John lives in the town I live in, is a very proud member of our community. I was able to get a message to him, and he immediately replied saying that he would love to come on the show. And he ended up coming to my house to do a face-to-face interview, which I'm going to tell you right now, blew my wife's mind. So we talked about an array of subjects. We started off with his early career. Then we got to Ladder 49, what it was like to shoot, what it was like to train for it, his perspective of the fire service. And then we transitioned to some of the health initiatives that he's actually helped spearhead, helping firefighters around the country, including Ocala, where I live. So this was an incredible interview. Again, I was blown away that he was able to come to the house and do a face-to-face, a medium that I love to do because the sound quality is so good when they do that. So I'm going to stop yapping. If you guys have a chance, again, go on iTunes, please rate the show and share the hell out of the episodes. Remember, the more first responders we get to, the more people that we're going to help. So without further ado, I introduce to you my interview with John Travolta. Enjoy. Okay, welcome to Behind the Shield podcast. I am sitting in my home on the couch, and across from me is John Travolta. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming. I can't believe that I was able to reach out to you and you just dropped everything and said yes so you could reach out to the first responders of the world. So I really, really appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome, because when I heard what your purpose was, I wanted to, because I believe in supporting the first responders. And I have a soft spot for firefighters, so there you go.
Well, we will definitely delve into that in this conversation. So if you don't mind, I would love to start at the beginning. So where exactly were you born, and what was your family unit like? How many siblings you had, and what your mom and dad did?
Born in Englewood, New Jersey. Had five brothers and sisters, six kids total. Mom was a school teacher, a drama teacher, a speech teacher. And dad was a coach and was in business with his brother in the Firestone tire business. And we had a very suburban lifestyle, and I loved it. I wouldn't have traded it for anything.
Okay, and he said he was a coach. What did he coach?
Football, basketball. But he's in the Hall of Fame in New Jersey for baseball, oddly enough. But he also was a coach with Vince Lombardi, the famous football coach, before he was the famed Vince Lombardi. My dad partnered him in coaching students in St. Cecilia High School in New Jersey.
Okay. Did you play any of those sports yourself?
I played football and I played basketball. 5 years of basketball and 2 years of football. Quarterback.
Oh, okay. Fantastic. Now, were your aspirations to go into sports, or were they already into drama?
Well, we had a choice, because dad was encouraging sports but not enforcing it, and mom was encouraging the arts but, again, not enforcing it. So we got to choose what we really wanted. So I experimented with sports and felt that it wasn't for me as an end game, but that I felt that I was making quite a good effect as a performer, and maybe that was a much more realistic end game.
Okay, so when you left school, did you pursue the arts in college, or did you go straight into
No, I left school and started making a living as a performer right away at 16 years old. I was making a good living at it, and it evolved and escalated into a wonderful career.
Right. Yeah. Now, what would you describe as your first true big break?
Well, every break is correlated or connected to a bigger break. For instance, that year I spoke of when I was 16, And I was in a summer theater, professional company of Bye Bye Birdie, a musical, and a big time agent was in the audience looking at somebody else. But I was the only person he thought would be ideal for his roster. So I waited a month, and he said the first mistake you made was to wait a month because you could be already doing other bigger and better things. And I said, okay, well, what's our plan? And before you knew it, I was off doing radio commercials and TV commercials and bits on soap operas and auditions for big time movies. And within months, I was already on a map, if you will. So that to me was a big break. Now, if you're talking about fame break, I would say that was Welcome Back, Kotter, when I was 21, a few years later. That would be when I became famous around the world on television. And then a couple of years later became famous in movies with Saturday Night Fever, Grease, Urban Cowboy.
Okay. Now, if my sources are correct, and my source would be Wikipedia, so it may not be correct, were you an extra in Emergency, the show?
Yeah, that would be that first, when I first got with my manager, I was 2 years into it. I was 18 or 17, and I got cast in Emergency, where I played a victim that it was hurt on the side of a hill. You can look it up. It's a pretty,
epic
cheesy scene where I have kind of not so good dialogue, but I was being honorable to the script. And then I was a medical center, and I was on The Rookies and Owen Marshall, Counselor, all the shows that were popular in the day prior to my doing my own TV series.
Okay. Now, I saw that you did the musical Grease. Was that before the movie? And was that how you got into the movie?
Yes, I did the stage show of Grease first. I did the National Road Company, and then I did Broadway. And that was really the blueprint for my clocking that one day maybe I could do the movie. And then indeed, a few years later, the movie came along, and I indeed did it.
Okay, fantastic. And then the other one of that period that people talk about, which you just did, was Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, yes.
Now,
yes.
Had you an extensive disco dancing past before that, or was that something you learned for the role?
Well, everyone in my neck of the woods, frankly, knew how to act, sing, and dance as a trifecta for getting more work. If you had these three abilities, when you auditioned for any given show, you had three times the chances of getting employment. So I had a natural ability to do all three. And it just added to my, let's say the character's traits. Being a disco dancer, you use the same talents at doing other types of dance, and you just design it for that genre. So that's what I did.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have any idea how many drunk people will be emulating those moves for decades after that?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Yeah, they're doing a beautiful documentary. I just finished it in England of Saturday Night Fever. And it's really accurate and terrific homage to the film for its 40th anniversary.
Okay, John, so we're going to get straight to Ladder 49. So can you tell me how that project even came across your radar?
It was a December 20th or 23rd. I forget what year it was. What's the year of Ladder 49?
2004.
It was the
release date.
Yeah, so it was December of 2003, and I was at my home in Maine, and I got a call from my agent in Los Angeles saying that there's a very interesting script about firefighters that they want you to play the captain, and would you read it and consider it? It's a real offer. They're going in February or March of 2004, and I said sure. I've always wanted to do a movie about firefighters, even back to Ronnie Howard's Backdraft.
Backdraft, yes.
Yeah. So they said, well, the exciting thing is they're trying to make this much more realistic. And the new technology was allowing us to to do that. So I said, okay, let's read it. I read it. I loved the part of the chief and thought it was fun and interesting and heroic. And I said yes. And we were off and running, but the prerequisite was that I had to do a month of training to be an actual firefighter. They said, we want all the men that are going to be in the movie to be trained as actual firefighters. So you have to go through literally the same training. And I said, you know what? That's awesome. I'd love it. I don't know if I'll make it, but I'll try it. So we did. And I was good up until the, you could help me with this, but there's a black box that you have to find your way through.
The maze.
The maze, yes. And I couldn't do it with all the equipment on because I couldn't find the wedges to get me up. And then they put smoke in there too and all that stuff. You couldn't literally see anything. So I was willing to do it, but without, I was willing to just do it, but not with the full equipment, which is the, you know, adds all that size and weight to your overall structure. So that was the only thing that I kind of drew the line at. I did everything else. I did all the actual putting out fires, simulated climbing the sides of the building. Everything but that last bit is what I did because I just couldn't find the niche for it. You know,
but, I don't think you're alone there. There's many firefighters that really can't stand wearing their pack, and a lot of people do. You still have to stay in, but you take your pack off to traverse some of those. So I would say that's still admirable if you got through everything except that.
Yeah, I did. And I got through it without the pack. So, yeah, but I learned a lot. And the main thing that I observed, and you'll understand this, is that I was watching many of these firefighters closer to retirement. There was in particular a chief, a captain, and a sergeant that were not doing well with physical ailments from all the poisons and toxic they were exposed to. So I got smart and I decided to offer them a program that I had helped start with others around the September 11th time, where we were detoxing the firefighters, the policemen, the first responders that were at that site in Manhattan. And the detox program is a sauna sweat program where you sweat for up to from 25 to 35 days, 5 hours a day. Includes a lot of vitamins and minerals and oils, pushing the toxins out of the body. And I established this along with Tom Cruise and my church. And we were very successful. We've done, I think it's upwards of 3,000 people in New York now. And all over the country, I started other divisions of what they call the Heroes Health Fund. And it's for even soldiers from the Middle East that are exposed to extremities of toxic elements. And it's a super effective. And anyway, to get back to the story, I noticed this, these three guys that were not doing particularly well in Baltimore. And I said, look, I'll open your own little division for detoxing you guys to prove to you how well it works. And if you like it, you can share it with other first responders. So I set up shop there. I invested in the money in setting up the saunas. I hired a doctor. I did this whole profile for them. And one December, after the movie had been released, and I said, well, guys, it's all set up. You are now officially ready to be detoxed. And they spent 25 days. They got out around Christmas Eve or something. And all their ailments went away, all the ones that they were suffering from. And this was anything from addiction to pills that they were on because of these toxic effects, to not being able to sleep, to organs shutting down, and some even more extreme situations. But they all got fixed. And they were very excited, couldn't believe it. It was as if by magic. And we started a Baltimore Heroes Health Fund right there where I filmed the movie. And then we opened up another one in Nevada, and then another one in Utah. Anyway, we have about five of them around the country, including New York, of course, and we're trying to build and make more of them. And they're so successful. So that was my personal gift back to the firefighters and continues to be so. Even here in Ocala, I have a place where the local firefighters can use the Heroes Health Fund to help them detox if they're interested.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard that from local firefighters. I've got friends in Ocala Fire and Marin County Fire, and they've told me that story about, you know, going through a detox and doing the niacin and the Swedish steam baths, and it's now catching on where I've heard of other departments detached from your specific drive that you've done that are also putting saunas in the stations and steam baths for the same exact reason.
They really need to. There were several local Ocala firefighters that we succeeded with to have the same result as the Baltimore guys. I was just giving you the origin of it, which was Baltimore, New York, but we were successful in starting it here in Ocala as well.
Right. Yeah. And then, well, speaking of Baltimore, did you actually spend time in the stations and running calls with the guys there too?
Yes. Okay. We did that. We had to, as part of our training, to be authentic. So there was many calls that we went on. A couple became volunteer firefighters after the movie.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, so I think two of the actors actually signed on to be volunteer firefighters because they were already trained and they got their cert. So they just decided to be on call if they were needed.
Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. And now I want to get the gentleman's name right. Where are we here? Goodness, great. I'm going to cut this bit out too. Gentleman. Okay. Lieutenant Mark Lant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Mark, was he kind of mentoring you through this whole thing?
Yeah, he was our lead trainer, very patient. And, you know, there were some funny times too, because when we had to do the call within a 60-second period to get in equipment on the truck and out. And of course, I was doing everything correctly, I thought, but I was by far the slowest of all of them. So there was one take where they said action, and they tried to do it in actual time where we get our equipment on from the time it's called to the time the fire engine leaves the house. And I finish everything and everybody breaks out into laughter because they've been already ready for about 40 seconds. And I'm the only one. I think they clocked me at 2 minutes getting everything where they were, you know, under a minute. And I said, hey, I'm an old man, you know, leave me alone.
Well, speaking of that, so you had a huge amount of real firefighters in the production as well. Is that right?
Yes, and they needed to be. They, you know, with any time you're trying to accurately portray a subject matter, you really have to have the real deal with you. You know, I finished a race car movie, and if we didn't have the actual professional car race drivers, we wouldn't be authentic. We wouldn't pull it off. You really do need the real deal.
Yeah. You know? No, I had Captain Dale Dye. Have you met him?
Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
Yeah, I worked with him when I had stunts before I became a fireman. So
really?
I worked with him in Japan doing the Terminator show for Universal Studios.
Oh, no kidding.
And he put us through the boot camp. It's a very mini, gentle version of what he put the guys through for Platoon and Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers.
Oh, very good.
But again, for the same reason that you guys did the fire, is I've interviewed so many military people on this show because I hold them with high regards, especially the special ops guys, and so many of them say that especially Band of Brothers is something they respect, and it would not have been that way had they not had, you know, real soldiers in the movie and the actors being taught by a soldier.
Also, it gives the actors that are not professional firefighters or whatever the profession they're portraying confidence to have someone near them that is exactly the real deal. And you know, actors have a certain pride that they want to be execute things well. And if you have an expert next to you that can clock what you're doing, then you don't feel like you have an insurance policy next to you, and it feels very good to do that.
Yeah.
Am I doing the right thing? Next take, do it this way. Try to, okay, cool. Now you know that there's at least 1 to 3 takes that are absolutely authentic, and they can scratch the one that's less authentic.
Right. Yeah. I did the World Trade Center with Nicolas Cage, and I must say, he was physically there on the set, nothing to do with me. We were just glorified extras, but I guess they took that to such a point when the final, the movie came out, we were literally silhouettes through a window, but even then they still wanted those silhouettes to look like they knew what they were doing.
Of course.
So
makes absolute sense. Yes.
All right. So once you've gone through that training, had your perspective of what these men and women go through changed?
Completely, because the danger was very real to me now. What they're doing and risking is completely authentic in regards to whether they like it or not. They are heroic. And I think it's empirical that they are, because as the saying goes, everyone else is leaving the fire and they're going in. I mean, that's putting your life immediately on line. And I think it's completely impressive. My viewpoint, I mean, you got an inkling that it was like that, but when you experience it yourself and you feel the heat and you see the complexity of how fires, let's say even in a kitchen fire where apparently the most dangerous fumes are from plastics that, ignite, and then the firefighter or the people trapped breathe that in and it solidifies in their lungs, knowing that it's a kitchen fire or a restaurant kitchen fire or something, you're going into something that even if you don't get killed might be damaging you for life. It's a very tricky thing that these guys are estimating, but they do it,
And
how brave is that?
Yeah. Well, speaking of the heat, another thing that I got from a couple of the interviews I saw about the movie, they had the LPG props blaring when you guys were shooting. Is that right? So you were feeling a lot of heat.
Oh, always.
Yeah.
And it was the first, and I'm not trying to brag or say that we're better than other movies, but I do think as far as authenticity, we did capture it better than any film to date, because we simply had the technology to. And the earlier films did not. So we are part of it's the evolution of the technology of film that allowed us to be authentic, or let's say more authentic than prior films or earlier films.
Yeah. Yeah. Because another one that's prior to you, again, back to Backdraft, that's pretty much before that, the 49 was shot, I would say held as the best one. But there were obviously some big holes in the game, i.e. being in the middle of those fires and not wearing a mask and having perfect dialogue and like, wait a second.
Which is what they do a lot in aviation films. It drives me crazy. They do all sorts of things that are inaccurate. But in this one, we were 100% accurate. But that's because the firefighters were not going to allow us to be anything else. But we asked them to not allow us to be anything else but authentic.
Yeah. Now, there's I would say there's one more movie, and we're talking, a long, long time after Ladder 49 now, but have you seen Only the Brave yet?
I have not.
Okay. I highly recommend that. That, to me, now has joined the other two as an incredible movie. Josh Brolin played one of the lead roles.
It?
And it was released, let me see, about 2 months ago now. It's based on the Prescott 19, so the 19 wildland firemen that were burnt over in 2013 in Arizona.
Oh, really? I didn't know about it.
Yeah, so I highly recommend that. But that's a wildland movie, it's very different. But again, they went through a firefighter boot camp.
What's your feeling right now about what's happening in Los Angeles?
In the wildfires?
Yeah, I mean, this is terra incognita. I don't think anything's ever happened like this before in that kind of high-end areas of Bel Air and Ventura. And I mean, what's your take on it?
I know from a firefighter's point of view, when you start building houses amongst, wildland interface, it's a gamble then. You're already rolling the dice. But just the sheer magnitude of some of these fires, it's almost like a fire perfect storm that we're seeing. Some of the footage has just been, you know, heart wrenching. But I used to
what
work
do you think was the cause, or what would you say are the probable causes of the cause?
I am detached from that side now, so I would be, you know, any words from my mouth wouldn't even be worth it, but I would definitely ask my old apartment, Anaheim, which is in Orange County. Mm-hmm. Those guys have been out fighting fires.
Is it just dryness? Is it arson? Combination? You know, I mean, are these all things that are usually considered?
I think the arson, the point of origin, is almost irrelevant, because whether it's a cigarette, whether it's a piece of glass from the sun, whether it's a debris set. If it hadn't been these crazy dry conditions and these Santa Ana winds blowing through, it would be a spot fire and it would be out. So yeah. I think that what's causing the magnitude is certainly the weather, yeah, and this this dryness. But then sadly, the more of us inhabit this planet, the more we put our houses in you know, more dangerous places, whether it's on a cliff on the edge of the ocean or, you know, up in the hills.
How are you feeling about the neighborhood you're living in? Do you feel that they're pretty well prepared for any kind of fire?
I think it's, so as far as topography and what we would look at as a risk, we're pretty good. We're surrounded by roads, would be fire breaks. You know, there's not a lot of heavy fuel as far as you know, some of the green plants that do burn fast. But I'd say our biggest threat here is hurricanes. But again, unless we had a direct hit from a tornado.
Ocala has almost magically missed it for years and years. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of surrealistic that it never quite affects this area. And the Clearwater area is the same. Clearwater and Ocala seem to be these little divisions that never really quite get hit that hard.
No. Well, the same as Disney. That's who we protect now. And they say there's a bubble over there. I mean, we've had some, you know, epic near misses.
Well, there's some good being done there.
So, well, speaking of Ocala, so that's another thing I wanted to touch on, you know, while we were talking. Yes, you're this big, you know, star on the screen, but you're also extremely loved in the city that I live in, you know, that we share, Ocala. And almost every restaurant we go into, there's, you know, pictures of you in a good way, you know, just eating there, being a normal resident. So what was it that drew you here, and what was your impression when you first came?
Basically, the fly-in community concept is what drew me here, because it where I live is quite a large runway and was capable of safely bringing in and out any size of aircraft. So, and my wife really wanted to be in the country. So I think that those are the two main things. And it's close to my church in Clearwater. And I think those two were primary the reasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because as we were talking before we went on mic, that sense of community, I think, is very strong for a sleepy little town in the middle of Central Florida.
Oh, I think
we're very
so
proud
too.
Of our little
yeah,
town.
Yeah, I think that I'm not mistaken, we got voted as the number one family community in the country to bring up a family. Like, this would be the right atmosphere. And I think I remember there was a survey done recently about Ocala, and it rated so high relative to everywhere else in the country for all the right reasons. Like, for instance, this is what I was told anyway, that the priorities of the citizens seem to be more group oriented versus individualistic. You know, they're not, it's not, we need a self-centered thing to open or do. It's like, I'd like a good place for the kids to go. I'd like a good place for the family to blah, blah. I would, you know, I would like more community activity. They're, all the desires of the individuals seem much more group for the group more than self-centered ideas. And that's unusual, you know. That's, you know, it's a kind of exciting thing, old-fashioned concept that is now reliving itself here in Ocala.
Yeah. And we talked about before about the whole tribal thing. I think we have that, you know, we're proud of our little
network here.
I agree
with you. I think there is a tribal feeling that makes everyone feel good about being here. And it's evolving into all the the niceties that any cosmopolitan city could have, and it'll get more so. But I mean, we're not wanting for any, for much here, you know, as far as entertainment and food and stores, and you know, it's continually evolving.
Yeah, it is. I mean, every time they close a business down, it seems like a more genuine family-owned business pops up in its place, which is great to see.
Yeah, it really is.
All right. Well, I'm going to just, you said about emotions. So the one thing I want to touch on before, we kind of close out, one of the most powerful moments, I think, that most people would say about Ladder 49 was when you gave the eulogy when Joaquin Phoenix's character had passed away. I saw Ladder 49 right when I came out of my very first fire department's orientation, which was 3 months of hell, by the way, Hialeah, if you can still remember that. Mm-hmm. But it was October, and at the end of the movie, you know, it was very tragic, and you saw the funeral, and you know, it was a real punch in the gut as far as the job, but it was still two-dimensional on screen. I watched Ladder 49 with my son, Ty, you just met, for the first time he's ever seen it. He's just turned 10. I figured it was a good time to watch, especially before he met you. But when I watched that scene, it was completely different. I've been a fireman 13 and a half years, and in the last 4 or 5, I've lost count of how many firefighters are buried from, you know, not any dramatic death in a fire or anything like that, but from cancer, from heart disease, from drug overdose, from all these different things. And the detail in that scene, not only, you know, the actual funeral itself and then your eulogy, but the way they saluted, the bagpipes, all these different, you know, elements that they had. I mean, I was in tears watching it, because it wasn't two-dimensional anymore. As a fireman halfway through his career, it was real now. And then when you did your eulogy, obviously, I mean, I was crying like a baby as well.
Yeah, so. I really totally understand. And, you know, that's why I love that film so much. I think it has a depth and an authenticity that is rare. And as far as your friends are concerned that you've lost, this is a time where you can promote the Heroes Health Fund to them, because maybe many of them, their lives would be saved if they experienced this Heroes Health Fund and the detox program. They would, you know, have a different fate. And you can help them have that by promoting it on your show and enlightening them about how it works, and be a great thing.
Absolutely. Well, I will put that on the website for today's episode, which will be jamesgearing.com for you guys listening. I'll put a link there. Great. I also want to put a link as well for the Jet Travolta Foundation. Can you just give us a brief overview of that as well?
Yeah. When my son passed, we started a foundation that was very widely scoped because... so many things my son was connected to, and education and other people and illness in children and different aspects. And it was so complex, his situation, that I felt like limiting the foundation to just one or two ideas, it was not enough. So I widened the scope for all areas, not just any particular illness, but education and support of special needs children, because that's really an area that until you experience a special needs child, you don't realize the magnitude and the depth of concern it can give a parent. And more importantly, the child itself, they're not having an easy time of it, you know? So it's a good thing to do a wide spectrum, and when you're doing a charity like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I will put the link on there as well.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Okay, so just a couple of rapid-fire questions I always ask everyone. Is there a book that you recommend to people on anything in the world?
Oh, gosh. Entertainment-wise, let's give your other credit. I have to think about that, because there's so many good books out there that it's difficult to hone it down to just one. It would depend on your interests and your interest levels, I would imagine. But you know, of course, I'm gonna promote my own you know, religion, and probably, I don't know, fundamentals of thought, or let's say Dianetics, or Science of Survival. One of these books are always interesting to read for people to help them through life and give them some tools. Those would be the books I would immediately recommend. And then there are others. Friends are too, you know, I grew up with all the classics and always enjoyed them for young people, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird and Airport, and, you know, because I was an aviator, and these are all books that were fun to read. I don't know if in a new unit of time if there'd be much fun for people, but that's what I grew up with, you know.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Now, what about a movie and or documentary?
I love documentaries, and I think the there's so many documentaries that I've enjoyed over the years. You know, I like the World War II documentaries that investigate the antics and politics of that. I think there's always something to learn from them. Any aviation documentary, any rock star documentary, I find interesting. You know, there's many recently that are good. And then what was the other movie?
Movie and or documentaries. So it can be.
Yeah, movies are so, again, each year I have not, to be perfectly honest, investigated this year's cinema enough, and I have my obligation at the end of the year to watch movies for my voting for the Academy. So I will take time to do that. So I don't have one yet that I would recommend recently.
Okay, I'm pretty sure the Academy will be sending you Only the Brave, so that'll be coming to your doorstep soon.
Yes.
Okay, now, is there a guest that you would recommend to come on the show to talk to the first responders of the world?
What I'll do for you is I'll give you a list of about five guys that I think will blow your mind with what they went through with the Heroes Health Fund and detoxing, and to give you details of their life-threatening illnesses that they had that were completely handled with the program. And I think it would do you and your fellow first responders a great deal to hear someone who actually got their life saved.
Absolutely. That would be fantastic.
And I think the more extreme situations are even the ones that will be better for you to hear, because we all know a healthy guy can get more healthy, but when you have a totally artificially affected firefighter or first responder that has been exposed to things that he shouldn't have been exposed to but had to for the line of duty, to hear their magnificent results would be much more effective, I think.
Yeah, nothing more powerful than the life story.
Yeah,
definitely. Okay, and the very last one before we talk about you know, where else we can find you, what do you do to decompress when you're not acting and not flying?
Well, flying is one of the things I do.
Okay,
do,
or flying. Sorry.
And I take courses at my church, and that helps me decompress. And I spend time with my family, and that helps me decompress. And travel, if I can, as not just for business, but for pleasure. And honestly, being in Ocala helps me decompress. I'm always more chilled when I'm here than anywhere else. You know?
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah,
love it.
I can
here.
See it.
People ask, why do I, because I work in Orlando, why don't I live down there? And it's like, well, it's very simple. Just come to Ocala and you'll see.
Yeah, and it may take a few months to get it, but once you're here, you always come back.
Yeah, exactly.
I found that people that leave to get out, they always find themselves coming back to Ocala.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've got the two websites you talked about already, the Heroes Health Fund and Jet Travolta will be on there. Are there any other social media or websites that you want to talk about?
No, I think we covered them all. Do you know? I think that's good.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I truly appreciate that, and I know that people listening will really, you know, be blown away by this interview, so thank you.
Oh, good. Well, my pleasure.